I'm Ken Nash.
And I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And we're Building Bridges.
And now we're building bridges to red states, because red states are weakening child labor laws. Glenn Dargan, we'd like to welcome you. We picked up on a very important piece that you wrote in the Progressive magazine, which were staggering those small fingers back at the looms, back at factories, cleaning meat packaging plants, child labor. Before we find out how severe the problem is and why the Republican states in particular are trying to loosen the laws, why don't you give us a sense of what the social imperative and the context for the evolution and advent of child labor laws has been?
If you look back at history, there is a dynamic between how many children are working, the strength of the public schools, and the strength of the union movement. For example, they say in 1911, when the greatest amount of child laborers were working, the amount of teenagers attending high school was something like 11%. I mean, that shouldn't be a shock, but there was a direct relationship there between the two. And of course, when there was a historically a high level of child labor, wages were low and unions were weak, because the employers, of course, were going to fatten their bottom line and get the lowest amount of wages possible, which is against teenagers and whatnot. That's very much easier. Now, a lot of folks know that child labor was partially curtailed by the Federal Labor Standards Act of 1938 under Franklin Roosevelt. What a lot of folks don't know is, and it's very low profile, is that another way of child labor was curbed, or the excesses of it never did totally go away, were many states passed compulsory school attendance laws. So as more and more states pass these school attendance laws, child labor rates, or the amount of millions of kids who were working as child laborers, were now attending school and whatnot. And at the same time with the Wagner Act, the adults were replacing child laborers on the assembly line in factories and other businesses. So there is a direct connection between child labor, the strength of the union movement, and the strength of the public schools. Knowing those connections makes it easier to understand the dynamics at play today with child labor coming back. 2023, but you'd think if from the headlines, it's 1896.
I understand which you're pointing out, the correlation with the schools, and actually laws compulsory education, which lowered right. The rate of child labor. But what about the fact that there were child labor laws? What was the kind of groundswell that said, no, this isn't an issue of parental rights. This has a different kind of value. It's not a matter of self-determination or independence or even material sustenance for the family. There's something harmful morally and politically about putting minors to work in desperately frightening and dangerous situations, from the farm labor group, from the farms to the factory. Tell us a little bit more about how some of that legislation came into being.
Well, it was federal legislation that Woodrow Wilson and the Democrats originally passed, like in 1916, and it was precisely on those grounds that child labor was a moral issue. Unfortunately, a very right-wing Supreme Court threw out the law as unconstitutional, you know, interference in private business. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Indeed.
To answer your question, I think Woodrow Wilson and the progressives were motivated by those opinions that you expressed. In the New Deal, which did successfully outlaw most of child labor, the Fair Labor Standards Act in 1938, it was a little different. The feeling was with so many adults unemployed and without jobs, that getting kids out of the factories and back into the schools would open up these jobs to the adults and help alleviate the Great Depression. I think there were two, in the progressive era, it was more kind of the disgust, you know, from all the muckrakers and Upton Sinclair in the jungle and all the muckrakers who were showing the horrors and the pictures of the kids. And I think the Great Depression, it was just the economic squeeze, you know, that it didn't make sense to have kids taking jobs that adults could do.
One of the areas in which there was an exemption to the Fair Labor Standards Act was farm labor.
Right.
Do you want to tell us what the impact was on farm labor?
Right. The migrant farm workers, that's a really sad story, of course. The New York Times did an investigation where their kids, you know, there's a surge of migrant kids who are 10, 11, 12 years old working in all kinds of dangerous factory conditions today. I think that investigation did push President Biden into some action. I think the reason that agriculture was exempted from this was the agricultural interests were just too powerful. And even Franklin O. Roosevelt and his New Deal reformers couldn't get it included in the Federal Labor Standards Act. They were exempted. And then we see the results, you know. You know, farm kids are, migrants are exploited. Native American people who work on farms, young people are exploited, have very few protections. And again, I think it's just the power of the agricultural lobby that it got itself exempted that accounts for that.
The issue of your piece in the Progressive Against Arts, you talk about a company that was fined $1.5 million for hiring children to clean meatpacking plants.
Right.
And we've got these ghastly pictures which we use to promote our show of what looks like a 7 or 8 year old in these oversized boots and raincoat and so on, clearly cleaning dangerous looking machinery. And we certainly do know that meatpacking plants, not to mention the reality of what happened during COVID, but in general, are terribly, terribly dangerous works. And then there's roofing contractors that you point out in Pennsylvania that were facing criminal charges for employing 12 to 15-year-old workers in hazardous work. So tell us, really, how extensive is this phenomena now? Is it indeed even a phenomena, or has it been a steady growth? What are the numbers in terms of child labor from, and we'll say from the age of, let's say, 15 down?
These laws, the laws in the red states were passed loosening child labor. The statistics on child labor violations were pretty grim. According to the Department of Labor, the number of minors employed in violation of child labor laws in fiscal year 2022 increased 37% over fiscal year 2021, and get this, 283% over fiscal year 2015. See, these are just the current laws. We're not talking about, this isn't even counting the exemptions that have just been passed. And I'll give you some more statistics to answer your question. Across the United States, child labor accounts for 20,000 worker compensation claims, 200,000 injuries, thousands of cases of permanent disability, and more than 70 deaths per year. I state with certainty that's the way it is now. Before, I don't even think these new exemptions, these new loosenings in the red states have kicked in.
Did I hear you say 200,000 injuries?
Yes, across the United
States. Of children working in,
Right. Child labor accounts for 20,000 workers' comp claims, so 200,000 injuries, thousands of cases of permanent disability, more than 70 deaths. Now, that number is not going to get better as the red states loosen the regulations even further. We're talking right now about the regulations as they are. They're going to get weaker. Those numbers are going to get worse.
What regulations are you talking about? Are you talking just about vouchers, or are you talking about other regulations also?
No, I'm just talking about the child labor regulations. I'm talking about child labor regulations that prohibit children under a certain age working in certain places right now for a certain amount of hours. Once those limits, such as in the red states, are loosened up, the numbers that I mentioned are going to get worse.
Well, let's talk about the red states now. Who are the red states and who are funding the efforts? And what is the political rationale? We can talk about the so-called moral things that are probably not all that much different than book bannings and so on, which is parental prerogative and so on, which is just a fraud, a gloss over for crass, vulgar materialism from a very exploitable population. But tell us since you've given us these terrifying numbers and the growth of this, who is funding it? What is happening? Which states are we talking about? And my gosh, do we have Charles and David Koch involved once again?
Well, you stole my thunder.
I never would steal your thunder. Elaborate on it. I just gave the first roll of the thunder. Now amplify it.
Okay. We'll throw a few bolts around. There are groups affiliated with Betsy DeVos, the former Education Labor Secretary, the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, the Foundation for Government Accountability. And you all posed a bunch of questions, and there's some really interesting connections that I think a lot of the public isn't aware of. The same Betsy DeVos's groups, and Betsy DeVos is very much known as an advocate of private school vouchers. What is not known, which has gone under the radar, is she has funded a group, a political group, that is also in favor of loosening child labor regulations. And that's not a one-off. It's the same thing for the Koch brothers. The Americans for Prosperity have come four square out for loosening child labor regulations. They are also in favor of school vouchers. They put money behind that, and they put money behind union busting. So I think all three of those are, I think Franklin Roosevelt had a great quote where he said, in politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. The same people who are in favor, you know, finding by and large, same groups that are in favor of child labor, deregulating child labor standards are the same groups pushing private school vouchers because they don't like public education. They're anti-public education. They are anti-union. They're pushing anti-union groups. So, I mean, it's almost like you see history in reverse, where in the 30s, with the rise of unions and the rise of mandatory school attendance, child labor declined. If child labor really increases, it makes sense that public education is going to get weaker and unions are going to get weaker because, you know, workers are competing with children in the wage market. So in a way, it's like the 30s in reverse here, which is what they want.
Now, Governor Sanders in Arkansas just signed a bill that would greatly expand school vouchers. What exactly does this bill do, and how does this tie in also with charter schools?
And that's Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Right. Okay. I did read that briefly. I don't know all the details of the bill, to be honest. I know it did vastly expand public vouchers. I think, I can check on this, but I think public vouchers were on a much more limited basis. And what this bill does was it expanded it to a wider tract of the public. More people would be eligible to be put in for these vouchers. But it's interesting that you bring this up because when she signed the bill to loosen child regulations in Arkansas, that got a lot of press. This one didn't, and it really should have. And there was no connection made between the two. A bill loosening child labor regulations and a bill undercutting public schools. And I think there should be. I think there is a connection because the same politicians, the same groups are pressing for both. When you have more child labor, you're going to have weaker public schools.
Glenn, one of the other things that you raised, which was horrifying to me, all of this is, but it was kind of insult to injury, if you will. And that is, there's the weakening of the laws that enable child labor to be used in explicitly and demonstratively adult venues of work. But aside from that, there's the idea of, since you mentioned 200,000 injuries, which just strike my moral conscience to the limit, but that they're also working to limit the liability of employers who are using child labor. Talk more about that, because that's just... it's so immoral. It's so ghastly.
Yes, I mean, that's a great point you brought up, because in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin, there was a major push to limit the liability of companies in case some of their underage workers were injured or killed. Mm. And what this is really, really, really telling, because you mentioned before, you know, what are the arguments in favor of child labor? One of the arguments is that by people who are interested in loosening the regulations, is that loosening the regulations is for the benefit of the kids because it instills a work ethic in them.
Oh, yes, yes.
But the only way employers ever ensure the safety of any workers, be it adult or children, is if they're held liable for their actions. If they're not, if they're off the hook, like these Iowa, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin tried to do, then anything goes. I mean, they'll save money by cutting safety corners. That's going to be it. So it's a very cynical move. And the bottom line here is that these people pushing for limited liability and also child labor deregulation are not interested in the protecting the kids. They're interested in protecting the bottom line of their corporate donors.
And in Arkansas, the parents don't even have to get permission for their child to work.
That's right.
Under this new law.
That's right. So, I mean, that undercuts the whole second argument against that in favor of parental rights. This Arkansas law would not require kids to get permission from their parents.
Hmm. What I'm curious about is the chicken before the egg, if you will. And that is, did the Sarah Huckabee Sanders begin the loosening of laws first, or was this a long agenda item of organizations like Americans for Prosperity? Has this been part of a whole plot and plan to lower the wages of adult workers, undermine union influence, particularly as more and more unions are beginning to come back to organize in the South and to try to break the back of the right to work laws? So is this part of a whole conspiracy, a plot, a plan, if you will, that came from the Kochers and groups of a similar nature? Or is it that it started with the states and then was picked up and funded by the Kochs? It makes a difference if we understand how concerted this effort is to get youth, vulnerable children in the workforce.
The answer, I would say, is a resounding yes. That this is all connected and concerted. That's not really being highlighted in the media. I mean, if you look at what happened in Arkansas, again, I'm looking at Roosevelt's quote, that nothing happens by accident, that it's always planned that way. The expansion of the school voucher programs in Arkansas passed just a few weeks after the loosening of child regulations. So, I mean, that tells you that the legislation was roughly brought at the same time, okay? That's a hint that it was coordinated. You can see, it's funny that not only is Betsy DeVos pro-private school, anti-public education, not only is her organization's give money to loosen child labor's laws. But I'm reading a flyer from unions slamming her because after the Supreme Court ruled that, I think it was 2017, that public workers did not have to, public employees who were covered by public unions and collective bargaining agreements did not have to pay dues to those unions, DeVos's organization blitzed the media with text to teachers saying, you don't have to join union under this new Supreme Court law. You don't have to join the union. Quit. Make a statement. So, like I say, DeVos is known for being anti-public education. What she's less known on, but just as committed to, or her organization she funds, is anti-union. She's come out against teachers' unions. And pro-loosening of child regulation. She's anti-public school, anti-union, and that's a trifecta. I don't think that's an accident.
And by the way, do you have a sense how the public is responding in these red states to the loosening of these laws? Are they generally ill-informed, or is there a groundswell of opposition and revulsion to the idea of returning to those pictures of the really pre-depression of all these little kids, boys with suspenders, little girls with pinafores working as they held back their coughing and the advent of tuberculosis from working in the mill plants and so on? Is there a sense of public outrage?
There, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I always like to stress what can be positively done and not leave listeners feeling helpless.
Because you're an organizer.
Yeah, well, I'm a researcher.
A researcher whose work is there to organize, organize, sure. Organize.
It's interesting. The sub-minimum wage bill for youth failed in Virginia due to lobbying. There was a big push on that. They had a Republican governor there, Youngkin, and there was a groundswell in Virginia against that. So, I mean, Virginia is more of a purple state than a red state, but, you know, it is something. There is federal legislation to raise the minimum working age for farm workers. I think it's 14 that would bring it up to 16. That has a lot of support, a lot of organizational support. It's not going to pass this Congress, but it is at least planting a flag.
That's the Children's Act for Responsible Employment and Farm Safety 2022, or what's known as the CARE Act, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And there is, for our readers, there is a very good national organization. It's kind of like a network on this issue. It's called National Council on Occupational Safety and Health. And their website is www.nationalcosh.org. They have offices. They are an organization dedicated to safety, safe and healthy workplaces. They have a lot of citizens groups, a lot of labor groups behind them. And they have offices, 25 offices across the country. And if you go on their website, www.nationalcosh.org, you go on About Us, they will list all their affiliates. And if they're not active in your state, they could at the very least redirect you to citizens groups that are. Some other things, other straws in the wind that I'm looking at, they're not red states, but I think it's significant. There is a ballot initiative and that's slated to be voted on in California in 2024 that would raise the state minimum wage up to $18. There's a big push in the Massachusetts legislature to raise it to $20 by 2027. There are petitions in Arizona, a purple state, to also raise on the 2024 ballot to also raise the minimum wage to $18 an hour, just like California. Hopefully it will get on the ballot. Now, you might say, well, what does this have to do with child labor? I would say that if these initiatives and efforts pass, it will shift the political dynamic where you're looking at raising wages. And I would think that if you're raising wages for adults, and that's the dynamic and that's the direction the political winds are blowing, it would be harder, say, to push for a sub-minimum wage bill for teens. Now, I know that these are California and Massachusetts are blue states, and Arizona and Virginia are purple states. I haven't, as of yet, you know, scanning the news, seen any backlash yet in the red states. But who knows? I mean, in the United States, it was, you know, child labor was accepted as a norm like in 1900, and then all the muckrakers got to work and, you know, the horror stories got out. So that could change. That could easily change.
Well, thank you for helping us do some muckraking. I guess we have to go back and read Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. Actually, you don't even need to do that. Unfortunately, you can probably take a tour right down your street to an industrial sector now and see miners working, doing what must be adult labor, and adult labor for that matter, at decent pay and with the proper health provisions. You staggered me with the number of 200,000 injuries of children and the deep and profound weakening of child labor laws in the red states. Please, folks, get on the move to support the working class, to support our youth. And we want to thank you, Glenn Dungan, for your expose on this really critical issue. Our friend is a Washington-based reporter who does extraordinary research, but he does it to do what? To educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of the working class, and in this case, to eradicate once and for all child labor, child abuse, child exploitation, and to uplift the boats of the working class. Glenn, thank you so much for being with us. It's really appreciated.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
And again, we've been speaking with Glenn Dungan, a research reporter who's been dealing with labor issues for decades. This is Building Bridges with
Ken Nash
and Mimi Rosenberg, and we do just that. We build bridges to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people. Thanks for listening.